Welcome to Hype episode 170. My name is Selena and I have Pam here with me this week. As always, hello Pam.
Hello.
Welcome to another week of exciting entertainment news stories.
Yay!
Yay!
What's that like royalty-free sound, like, you know, like the kids that are like, yay!
Oh, the sound effect?
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay! That's that. That's how I feel anytime we hit record.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. It's because we clap, so we get in the excitement spirits. We trick ourselves. No, the excitement is genuine. Anyway, insert yay effect here. As always, before we start the show, we want to remind you of the contact information if you want to get in touch with us about what we talk about this week or what you would like us to talk about, or if you have any Merlin thoughts, then you can send them our way. hype@hypeable.com is our email. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com in the podcast section. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can also find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. If you are interested, we also have a Patreon, which is located on patreon.com/hypepodcast. We do video content and we also do a weekly bonus audio segment. And actually this week, it's a little bit of a very excitement surprise announcement. We're not going to be discussing a news story this week because we are launching our Merlin stuff.
Yay!
Insert children yaying
here. See, children yaying, it works for all occasions.
So after months and months and months of planning, we are finally ready to get started with our Merlin rewatch / watching spoiler-free for the first time. If you guys somehow are unaware, if you're new to the show, me and Pam are both huge Merlin fans and we have wanted to revisit the show for so long, and we finally decided, the schedule isn't completely established yet, but we finally decided what we're going to do. We're going to be breaking each season down into discussions of one or two episodes that will be available on the main feed. So everybody who listens to Hype and subscribes via like wherever you happen to subscribe, you get access to our Merlin watch, which will be spoiler free. And you can watch along with us. You can skip ahead. You can not watch and just listen to us. However you feel, however you want to watch it, you can with us. And then if you are a Patreon subscriber at the $2 level, which is where, you know, that's our only level now, then you also get some bonus features related to that. So that might be a commentary of an episode. It might be an extended discussion. It might be a spoiler-filled discussion of something that we don't bring up on the main rewatch. We're still finalizing all the details, but this week on the Patreon, we will feature a special Merlin-related thing. So if you're interested, go check that out on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And if you're just subscribing without being a patron, then you still get the rewatch. So everyone wins. Yay! And we will explain how everything's going to work on the Merlin special episodes. I'm not going to spend too much extra time on it here, but if you're interested, it's as I kind of said before, whether you're a Merlin fan or you're watching for the first time, it's going to be safe for you. So we hope that everyone enjoys and that you're excited to get started. I know we have a lot of listeners who've been requesting the Merlin content for a long time, so we're excited to finally get around to it here, December 2017, nearly until 5 years after.
Oh no! After Selena and I watched the finale together on Christmas Eve.
Yes, and had a reaction.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, tell all your friends too.
Yes,
because
please.
Like if you're involved in like the Merlin fandom online and stuff like that, spread the word because we want this to be like a community extravaganza, and yeah, it would just mean a lot to us if you did that. The Merlin community has always been really accepting and welcoming of what we've been able to do here, and we appreciate them a lot, and so we want to get the word out.
Absolutely. All right, so more details on that in the special and in episodes to come. we are going to skip how we hyped this week because we neither of us have hyped
Merlin
at all.
It's kind of our hype. You know, we've been planning the rewatch. So
yes, that's why we don't have anything else to talk about. We're also kind of anticipating Star Wars week next week, which is going to be very exciting. And we're going to have to figure out how to discuss that and how to sort of manage all of that. But we'll get back to you with that next week. We will definitely be hyping next week. We'll have to find another time to record because at this time next week, I will actually be watching Merlin? No, Star Wars. Star Wizards is what I'll be watching. But so we're going to move straight into the news. And we actually have it's good that we skipped How We Hype this week because we have a long lineup this week. Lots of news. I like that your story is first. It's so random, but like that's just how
I know. But you know what?
This week.
It's important. The story is important to me and to many people who have already gone to see Coco in America. This is good news for you, Selena, because hopefully this means that this will be over and done with by the time it gets to Denmark. Coco is great and everybody loves it. And Frozen is equally awesome, I guess. And people seem to like that. But they are two things that definitely don't go together. And that's a lesson that Disney and Pixar had to learn the hard way. So for those of you guys that don't know, or you probably do if you've gone to see Coco already, there was a bit of perplexed outcry from many audience members because before Coco was even, you know, Coco even starts in the theaters, everybody had to sit through this Frozen short called Olaf's Frozen Adventure. It's cute. It's a cute short, but it's not a short. It's more like a feature. It's 22 minutes long. And then on top of all of the trailers that are going to be shown before a big time movie like Coco, it doesn't make sense to have all of this paired before a movie that already has, you know, a runtime of like an hour and 30 minutes. It's a long time for a kid to sit in a theater. It's a long time for adults to sit in a theater. I took my grandparents to see Coco and they were so confused as to why we were sitting through like basically a Frozen movie before the movie we were actually meant to be seeing. So, you know, good idea, but it didn't make sense to have both of them together. And as of December 8th, the good news is if you go see Coco in theaters, Olaf's Frozen Adventure will no longer be screening before the actual film. So it looks like they actually paid attention to the commentary that was going on online. And I think that they made the right decision. Despite how, I mean, like I said, I thought that the short was cute, but I don't think it has a place before Coco or any movie. It's just way too long.
Well, I think that's a good point about the length of it, because I think I'm actually never been a huge fan of the shorts, the Pixar shorts that they do before the movies. Not because I don't like the shorts. I would watch them online or like in some other forum. But it's always weird when you sit down to watch one movie and then they show you like however long another movie and no matter how good it is, I'm always just annoyed. I just want the movie to start. Like I time my bathroom break before the movie very carefully and then the short comes in and I'm like, do I go now? Do I wait? What do I do? So a 20 minute long short, oh my gosh, I would like be freaking out. But I, you know, that said, I think, you know, Frozen is I like Frozen. I think it was a good movie. I think it had a good message. I wouldn't necessarily see why a Frozen short would be any different than like a volcano short. You know, like it to me it's like, yeah, whatever. Like they're all like shorts, but obviously the main issue with this one might be that it wasn't in fact that short. You know, so it makes sense. But I mean, just not having seen Coco, obviously, and just knowing the Disney Pixar usual model of doing those before movies, I guess I probably wouldn't think this was any different.
It is kind of interesting, though, because the one big thing that people were a little bit confused by is that Frozen is a Disney entity. Pixar doesn't animate Frozen. And so everybody
That's
is kind of
point.
Like, usually Pixar, Disney, like the shorts that come before Disney Pixar movies are Pixar originals, and they're usually about 7 to 10 minutes long maximum. Mm. So it is kind of interesting that they decided to do this. And then like my brother, like, because when we went to see it, like I had completely forgotten that we were going to get the Frozen short, quote unquote short, before the movie. And then everybody I went with like didn't realize that that was going to happen. And then my brother was like, so did Disney not think that they could sell a movie about brown people on their own? Like, did they feel like they needed a big entity like Frozen to get people to come watch Coco? And I started to think, you know, like, maybe you're right. I'm not sure. But then anytime I saw Coco TV spots, none of them said, also featuring Olaf's Frozen Adventure. So it was just really weird.
Yeah,
I was like, it was not advertised. But
I had no idea that it was going to be before the movie.
Like, yeah, it was so weird. Sure. And it even had its own press day. So they didn't screen it before, like, Coco screenings. Olaf's Frozen Adventure literally had its own press day in LA and had its own screenings. So if they thought it was too much for critics, whose job it is to sit through these things, then why wouldn't they think it was too long for the general masses? You know what I mean? It was just really,
to be honest with you, I would almost assume it would be the other way around, that they had no idea how to get this out into the world. And they were like, well, people are going to go see Coco. It's going to do great. Let's just shove it in front of that.
I guess they should have just, what they should have done is either shown it on its own and made more money, or they should have just done it as like a TV special.
Yeah.
And brought in the ratings. Anyway, it's
we'll
like,
never know.
It's done. What's done is done. But the good thing is if you were kind of like, oh, I didn't really want to sit through Frozen. Like, now you don't have to get to the theater 22 minutes late or 42 minutes late. If you take into account trailers, you can just show up and watch what you wanted to watch and watch Frozen Adventure at a later time.
So moving on now, we're going to talk a little bit about Star Wars this week ahead of the big release of The Last Jedi. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So this story, actually, I wanted to bring it up because it kind of like took me off guard. And I was like, I'm a little bit annoyed by it, but I guess it all turned out okay in the end. During all of his press junket stuff, Rian Johnson revealed yet another perk that he's been given by Lucasfilm. This is like my funniest running thing to me. It's just like things that Rian Johnson is given, you know, like a hashtag, a trilogy, a movie, extra time for the movie, and apparently also the free rein to change Rey's parentage, because whatever answer J.J. Abrams originally came up with for The Force Awakens, which informed, you know, the movie, it informed the foreshadowing, it informed Daisy Ridley's performance, apparently Rian Johnson wasn't told, and he was allowed to pick his own parents for Rey, essentially, which frustrates me so much, because I hate the idea that I was watching The Force Awakens trying to pick up on clues that potentially would never pay off. However, it doesn't matter, because the answer he came up with was apparently the same as the answer that J.J. Abrams came up with. So Rey's parents now, which are poised to be revealed in The Last Jedi, I don't know if we actually know that they will be revealed or if people are just speculating that they will be, is going to align with what was set up in The Force Awakens. So that's good, but it feels almost like a happy accident, because we could have had, like, say that J.J. Abrams was like, she is Obi-Wan Kenobi's daughter. And then Rian Johnson was like, no, she is the daughter of what's-her-face from Jyn Erso's secret love child. Like, you know, like, it frustrates me that the answer could have been changed, but I'm glad it wasn't. And it's also interesting because apparently it must have been like really obvious if they both came to the same conclusion independently. So what do you think about this? Am I overreacting?
No, I think that could have, there could have been a potential catastrophe there. But it also kind of makes me wonder if we actually know the answer in our hearts and we just don't, like, we don't see it because we don't see all the pieces yet. You know what I mean? It's going to be one of those, like, of course, why didn't I see it before moments. Like, if they both came to the same conclusion, it's got to be something that we will see coming.
Yeah.
So.
Right, exactly. I feel like they could make it work almost no matter who they pick, because I think, like, the three sort of most obvious, obviously Luke is who everyone's thinking, well, it has to be Luke, but it's almost, because it's so obvious, it might be the answer because it's the most obvious answer, but it also might not be because it's so obvious. But so Luke is like obviously the front runner, and then she could be Leia's daughter, you know, mm-hmm. that yeah. somehow.
And I could see that, like, I feel like right now, if you want like the actual like perfect wrapped up bow, given yeah. Carrie Fisher send off, that would be yeah. like my front runner for like the happy ending, you know, because then the legacy lives on. Like her legacy exactly. would live on anyway, but it would physically live on.
Exactly. So that's like also another popular choice. And I think either way, if she's a Skywalker, like whether she's Luke or Leia's daughter, then I think the story could remain relatively the same. And it would also give her conflict with Kylo Ren, obviously, would be that much more meaningful. But also, obviously, Obi-Wan Kenobi is another popular choice, or she would be his granddaughter, I guess, if the timeline is to match up. That is a bit more of a fringe choice, but obviously since Obi-Wan is going to have his own solo movie, there is some stuff to work with there, and it would kind of, again, avoid it being like a total Skywalker fest, but it would also, again, with her conflict with Kylo Ren, it would still be like sort of like an echo of Obi-Wan and Anakin's original relationship, right? It would harken back to the first trilogy a lot, and also obviously the original trilogy with Luke and Obi-Wan, and it would also mirror like Obi-Wan mentored Luke, and now Luke gets to mentor Obi-Wan's child or grandchild. Like I feel like whichever way they go, if it's one of these three, it will have emotional weight. And it is kind of an answer that would be each easily reachable by both Abrams and Johnson. So I'm not like married to any one of those ideas. I think they could all be interesting. And if they, you know, if it's like if someone from like the extended universe, I'm not going to know who it is. So it's not going to hit me as being as emotionally relevant. But I'm open to anything. I honestly love Rey, and her parentage doesn't really mean anything in terms of what that character means to me. So I'm just excited. And I'm just so relieved that like whatever clues were set up in Force Awakens, now after we watched The Last Jedi, we can go back to The Force Awakens and be like, aha!
Yeah.
That's when they told us.
And it'll be a nice moment too, even for like, I think that I don't think they'll do anybody from the extended universe. I really think it's going to be somebody from the core yeah. trilogy yeah. because like just, I'm thinking back to my mom's reaction when we went to see The Force Awakens together as a family, and mm-hmm. that scene where Han and Kylo like finally like meet face to face and kind of, you know, there's a whole father thing. I remember her just like gasping because yeah. she like, I mean, obviously like they had set it up before, but it was just like the actual physical manifestation that this is like the next generation was like, kind of just like yeah. hit her like a sucker punch, and mm-hmm. and I feel like for them not to do that again would just kind of be like almost missing the mark. He just made her some, you know, her parents or her lineage, something that only like a few people would get, or like a small mm. group of fans would get. So
yeah, no, you're right, you're absolutely right. I also agree. I think it's gonna be someone we know, unless it's like Laura Dern's character.
Someone in which we case, sure. yeah. I'm assuming anyway. Speaking of love, there was a lot of love lost over on the Freddie Mercury biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. Bryan Singer was helming this movie, and then a bunch of drama happened, and the movie was supposed to continue filming after a break for Thanksgiving, except Singer did not return to set. And when this happened, the film released a statement revealed by The Hollywood Reporter, which read, 20th Century Fox Film has temporarily halted production on Bohemian Rhapsody due to an unexpected unavailability of Bryan Singer. And then they also said that he had to leave, his representative said he had to leave the film for a bit for a personal health matter concerning his family, and that he was hoping to return after the holidays. Now we're hearing a few days later that he has officially been fired from the Fox entity, and sources are reporting that the firing is actually due to a lot of tension amongst Singer and the rest of the cast. Tom Hollander, who was set to play Queen manager Jim Beach, also temporarily quit while Singer was helming the movie, citing his behavior, although he did come back to the project And then there was also reports or rumors circulating that Rami Malek, who is playing Freddie Mercury in the movie, had already complained to the studio about his unprofessional attitude and constant disappearances about Singer. So there's a lot that seems to be going on behind the scenes. I think it'll be a while before we get the full story, but definitely a dramatic turn of events for the upcoming Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. This is interesting. I hope it goes ahead with a new director, obviously, because we're very excited to watch this, but
That it's coming out. They have a while to kind of get things under control. It's not like when Ron Howard took over for Solo. Bohemian Rhapsody does come out next December, so it's kind of early enough that I think that we won't notice the hit.
Yeah.
So much as, like, if things go wrong with Solo, like, we will definitely notice and we will know exactly why. But, yes. This is a little bit of a different case.
Yes. And moving on now to another Brian and another exit story, but other than that, they have nothing in common, thank God. So this is a bit of a shocking story for fans of American Gods that Brian Fuller and Michael Green have actually left the series ahead of season two. So after the extremely successful first season on Stars, which was particularly a hit with fans of Neil Gaiman's book, Variety has broken the story that Fuller and Green have clashed with the production company Fremantle Media over the budget and the creative direction. So apparently the showrunners sought an increase in the budget, which would supersede the estimated $10 million per episode. So they've left the show, leaving it without a showrunner, and no replacement is yet in place. You know, Neil Gaiman has commented on this on Twitter, saying that he is not going to step in, which some people had hoped that he would, but that he is looking forward to working closely with whoever comes in to replace Fuller and Green. Brittany wrote this story up for Hypebol. She's one of the big fans of the show, along with Natalie and a couple of other people, and everyone's very upset because this likely means a huge change in tone and feel and commitment to the characters in these and this world. And everyone who watched and enjoyed the take by Fuller and Green will, you know, stand to maybe not like the new direction as much. So I feel a little bit torn on this, and I'm curious how you feel, because actually, like, I'm totally 100% obviously on the side of the fans, and I think this really sucks, especially when someone has such a clear vision and they are, you know, there's a direction disagreement with the production company. Like, you're always sort of tend to side with the creatives, obviously. But I actually, sort of a little bit of a confession here, I actually didn't really love American Gods season one. I didn't even finish it. And this despite, you know, Ricky Whittle starring in it, Ricky Whittle from The 100, obviously, and Ian McShane, and the fact that I really love the book as well. You know, like, I'm a big fan of this property, and I just, for some reason, I just wasn't really hooked by the show. So personally, I wasn't like, no, when I saw this news, but I kind of feel, obviously, the plight of the fans, because this sucks when there's something you really love, you know?
Yes.
So I don't know if you've watched it or...
I have not. This is a show that I really wanted to watch, and then it fell through the cracks, mainly because I don't subscribe to this network. It's like a separate subscription in America, with, like, unless you have like a fancy cable package, which I don't because money. But so I just haven't gotten around to watching this. But yeah, I would totally, like you, side with the fans, because the fans have been there watching this. And of course, like, I think about, like, all of the shows that it's kind of like similar with what happened to the Bold Type-ish, like, just that they're moving forward with a new showrunner, and all you can do is hope that person honors the tone that was set, especially since it was something that was very well received, like American Gods was well received. So yeah, that's kind of all you can hope for at this point. But it is, like, it is cause for concern, and proceeding with caution if you're a fan of the show is understandable, because, you know, there's so much that's up in the air still. But hopefully it all works out.
Hopefully. Yeah, I really hope so.
So we have a bit of a quick update for all of you that are eagerly anticipating the upcoming series, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is the Riverdale spinoff / Sabrina the Teenage Witch entity. Originally, the new Sabrina the Teenage Witch series was set to premiere on the CW. And earlier last week, we learned that it's actually received a 2-season, 20-episode order over on Netflix. So that's kind of pretty exciting. Netflix US tweeted out, "Sabrina is coming to Netflix and she just might outbrood Jughead. Don't at me about talking cats, parentheses, yet." Clue, perhaps.
No, but
But in all seriousness, I really, really love this move. I'm still really curious and also excited to see what they do with this. As you guys know, I'm really into Riverdale, for better or for worse. But I do kind of feel like with the darker tone that they're going for with these with this upcoming Sabrina spinoff, Netflix is a great place for that. I feel like they're going to have a lot more wiggle room. I feel like there is definitely potential to make this really dark and live up to the name and the title, Chilling. And I also kind of like that it's over here, because that probably means that crossovers are going to be a little bit trickier. So it's not going to be a show that needs to lean on the crutch of potentially having Riverdale, Greendale characters kind of, you know, keep back and forward, you know, in between each other and things like that. So, yeah, those are like my general thoughts on this. And if you guys have any extended thoughts, feel free to email us and let us know. Mm. Are you excited to check this out maybe?
A little bit? More now, honestly.
That it's on Netflix.
I totally agree with you. I think that Netflix is probably a much better fit, not only because it removes it from the Riverdale situation, which is, to me, just like a flaming nightmare. But hey, we have different tastes. It's okay. But just also because I really do think that it has a better shot of getting a bigger audience. I think Netflix has done, you know, just, I know Fuller House, again, is a totally different animal, but it has done pretty well in getting the nostalgia factor. And I think people will be more likely to check out or have more faith in. And it's so funny, isn't it, that you can do the exact same cast, the exact same creatives, the exact same production team, but when it's on the CW and when it's on Netflix, there's like a totally different expectation. And I think also like a totally different probably reception of it, and maybe faith in what it's doing is going to be higher by default. And so I think it's smart for the series to move it on Netflix. And it also just makes me really sort of curious and interested just in terms of this growing sort of blurring of the lines between Warner Brothers TV properties on the CW and Netflix, and how those lines between the CW and Netflix are kind of blurring in turn. Because, you know, over here, a lot of CW series are billed as Netflix originals. So Riverdale, for example, over here, it's a Netflix original. Dynasty is a Netflix original. There's a couple of other shows as well that if you are watching in this region of the world, you would think that Netflix had created those shows. And so I think it is sort of really interesting just thinking a little bit further about sort of Mark Pedowitz's plans for the network, his aim to have the CW be more of an online outlet. And I know that's not like directly related, but it's all just kind of making me think, like, I wonder, the CW has a lot of stigma against it. I think that that a Sabrina show could do perfectly well on the CW, but knowing it's going to be on Netflix and just sort of thinking along the lines of, well, how is that going to expand its audience and how is that going to change perception of the show? Yeah, it's opening sort of a lot of thoughts in my mind, and I wonder where the CW is going to be in like 5 years, you know, or 10 years, or how it's going to merge online, how their partnership with Netflix is going to continue to expand. It's interesting.
Yes, I totally agree, especially because, you know, you touched on this, they have the CW seed, and they took all of their entities off of Hulu, but they're still on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it definitely looks like they forged a pretty strong partnership. And it's just also like, you know, like you said, that is really interesting. And I know I have a few friends in the UK too, that like had no idea that Riverdale was a CW show until I was like, oh yeah, it's a CW show. And they're yeah. like, oh, well, that makes sense. You know, like after they like put it all together. But it's like, it's yeah. way different with Sabrina because if it's already starting out as a like US Netflix original, I feel like those tend to be a little bit edgier than just like shows that start off on the CW and then just get passed off as Netflix originals. Probably so Netflix can flip the bill for the licensing fees overseas, which are like completely different. But yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really exciting to see what they do with it. And hopefully they take advantage of the fact that not that I don't think they're going to go too crazy with it because they still want it to be accessible for the target audience, which is a little bit younger. But I do hope they take advantage of the fact that Netflix has a tendency to create young adult content that has more edge to it.
Right. We'll keep you guys informed as we learn more. I'm very excited about this and Pam is too. So that's great. And we're staying on Netflix, actually, for this next project that is a Netflix exclusive in all parts of the world. Altered Carbon is an upcoming sci-fi show that's kind of beginning to fill in Netflix's sci-fi gap. I mean, they do have other sci-fi shows, but this is looking like it's going to be a big one. It's based on the Richard K. Morgan 2002 cyberpunk novel of the same name. It stars Joel Kinnaman, Dishan Lakhman, one of my favorite people, and Renee Elise Goldsberry from Hamilton. So an all-star cast and a really, really, really interesting premise. It takes place in a futuristic world where rich people can have their consciousnesses stored on these digital implants, and then they can have them put into new bodies that are known as sleeves, and then they can essentially live forever. And there's this really cool announcement trailer up on social media and on Hypebeast as well, where you see this sort of ad for this company that says like, death is a minor inconvenience that we have now overcome. And so you follow a character whose name is Takeshi Kovacs, originally played by William Lee, who is imprisoned and has his consciousness taken, and then he wakes up in a new body, which belongs to Joel Kinnaman, and then his sister, Dishan Lakhman, plays his sister. Did I just say that twice? Anyway, you know what I mean. And she, I mean, this is interesting too, because I haven't read the story, so I don't know how this works, but she looks like she is the same in both the past and the present, even though hundreds of years have passed. So I don't know how she does it, but, you know, she doesn't age in real life either, so I guess it makes sense. And yeah, there's a bunch of other characters. There's a man who's trying to solve his own murder. Hamilton's Renee Elise Goldsberry's character sounds probably the most intriguing. Her name is Quell. She's the leader of a group of elite interstellar warriors. She was the one who originally trained Takeshi Kovacs. There's also Martha Higuerera, who plays Detective Kristen Ortega. And it's created by Leida Kalogridis. So it's got a female showrunner, which is great, especially because it's sci-fi and you don't really see that too much. With a pilot directed by Miguel Sapochnik, who actually helmed Game of Thrones' Battle of the Bastards episode. So it's really, really, it looks fantastic. It seems like a fantastic story. And I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on it. And then I'm also curious to hear your thoughts on, obviously, a big talking point about this series and this trailer in particular is how, obviously, Takeshi Kovacs is, I think he's mixed race originally in the novel. He's obviously played by William Lee in the flashback. And then he is put, the character is put into a, you know, the body of a white actor. And there's been some discussion about how the series is going to handle that, what it means. There's some people who are talking about maybe they won't be supporting it despite the diverse cast and creative team. And I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on that and the project overall, because I'm not too familiar with it.
I actually don't know much about the source material, but it seems like a really cool concept and the trailer looks really, really great. And so with that in mind, it's kind of hard to speak on the controversy other than to, you know, kind of just like, you know,
acknowledge that it's there.
Acknowledge that it's there, because it kind of sounds like they're what they're trying to do is be true to the source material, but at what point do you do that without like erasing, you know, essentially erasing a person of color from, you know, a major role? So it's kind of hard. I can kind of see both ways of it, but perhaps there's nothing to worry about and we'll see both actors get equal time, you know? Like, I'm assuming, and again, it's hard because I don't know the story well, that, you know, like, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, if you see them, like, out on the street, you see them as these people that they've assumed the bodies of. But then, like, if it's, like, their conscious, like, train of thought or whatever, like, inside their mind, like, maybe that's when you see the other guy. It's kind of hard to talk on it, though, because we don't know how the story goes, so.
It's tough. Yeah, it is tough. Also, because I think, you know, when I first saw this trailer, my sort of initial, without knowing any of the background, my initial thought was, well, I care about everything except Joel Kinnaman. But it's also just because I don't really know that actor and care that much about him. So I was like, well, Dakin Lachman is starring in this and I love her. And so I'm here for her, basically. And I would be sad if people wrote off this project, like, because of him. Because it seems to me like he is just one aspect of many, many really great aspects in the show. But it's tough. It's also tough because obviously I guess this series is set to deal heavily with identity of all different kinds. You know, when you are dealing with a show about people that can change into other bodies and sort of, they don't die, but the price of immortality is to sort of literally change your skin. And obviously that, if they made that like race exclusive, you know, to like your original race, that would include a bunch of different problems. So it is a tough topic to tackle, but before we see it and before we know how they do tackle those identity questions, I agree with you. I think it's maybe too soon to judge or at least to write it off because there's so many different directions that they could take this in. And I would be curious to see what they did. Also, because if his sister is, let's assume that she's put into a body that looks like her original body, and that same thing is not done to him, how's that going to affect him psychologically? It's going to be something that I would be really interested in seeing. So I'm very, very, very curious. And I'm 100% here for one of my favorite actresses of all time. I also think it's funny, just on a side note, that this concept is so similar to A Dollhouse, which she also starred in, by Joss Whedon. I love that series. And there was a whole storyline. Obviously, that came after the book, so it's not like it's, if it's stealing, it's that way around. But like, it was a whole storyline about a woman who had her consciousness implanted in this doll body of Eliza Dushku, who played Echo, to solve her own murder. And there was a flash forward where like they could change, like they had bodies. And then they could change consciousnesses at will. So it was kind of like the reverse of this, but really interesting. And just, oh my God, I think this stuff is so cool. It's like my favorite kind of sci-fi. I'm so hyped for this. So yes, it premieres on February 2nd, 2018. And I'm very, very, this is one of my most anticipated shows of 2018, I think. So yes, very exciting. Maybe I should read the book. Or maybe I shouldn't spoil the story for myself. I don't know.
Maybe you should watch season one and then read the book.
Maybe. Good compromise.
Yeah, I would think so. I feel like this is all Netflix news today, but Netflix is just continuously killing it. So what can we do? But like last month, we caught wind of all of the very serious allegations concerning Kevin Spacey. And it was very heartening, I guess, to see that Netflix took immediate action, launched their own investigation, deemed the accusations to have a weight of truth, and as a result, fired Kevin Spacey from House of Cards. So this was met both with applaud and also with a little bit of a heavy heart for fans of the series, because there was so much amazing stuff that was going on with the season. Specifically, people were sad because Robin Wright's character on the show was kind of really coming into her own and was set to really blossom as the show proceeded. But with Kevin Spacey leaving, everybody was kind of like a little bummed out that even if Netflix proceeded with their House of Cards spinoff, we wouldn't get to see the end of Robin Wright's story. Now it looks like we don't have to worry about that because Netflix head Ted Sarandos has confirmed that House of Cards season 6 will be moving forward without Kevin Spacey, but with Robin Wright as the lead. It's going to be 8 episodes long, and they said, "We're very excited. We were able to come to a good creative conclusion of House of Cards." So it sounds like things are going to be doing just fine over there, and any of you guys that are fans are going to get to see her character really blossom as the series progresses, and it sounds like a win-win for everybody involved. I have not seen House of Cards, so I can't speak very eloquently on what this will entail, but if you are a fan, I'm sure that this is news for a cause for excitement for you, because we've been seeing nothing but positive comments about this decision from fans of the show on Hypeable. So exciting times.
This is exciting times. I'm happy. I'm happy for fans. I'm happy for Robin Wright. I think I might be totally wrong, but as far as I know, yeah, she just like picked up the, like she just became president in the finale of last season. So people were like, well, this is perfect. You know, they quit the series right before it was her turn. So now she gets her turn and she gets to be the lead. And I love this. I love that the signal that this is sending that, you know, something like this, which was obviously House of Cards, was the Kevin Spacey show. And they're saying, you know what, we have a good show and we have a good lead and she's a woman and we're just going to carry on. I love that. I'd be curious to get my brother's thoughts on it, because I know he's a huge fan. And if he like says, oh, I'm not going to watch it if she's the lead, then I will take all of his chocolate candy and throw it in the garbage. No, I would never do that. He would never say that.
I'm going to take all of his chocolate candy and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, I don't mess around.
Oh, man. That's funny. It's like you don't need Elf on a Shelf when you have Selena. Yeah. Elf on a Shelf is there to make sure to police children, but Selena will just throw your chocolate in the fireplace and call it a day.
I will, man. Seriously, that's how I rule. So anyway, moving on now, we have a great story to wrap up the news, which is Time Magazine has just revealed its Person of the Year. And it is, in fact, Persons of the Year, because it is the quote-unquote silence breakers that have completely upended not only Hollywood, but really sort of the professional world, or the world, the balance between men and women in general. And, you know, sort of specifically naming the users of the hashtag MeToo on social media to spread awareness about sexual assault and harassment. And just what has sprung out of not just women, just detailing stories of the systematic harassment of women that occurs in all aspects of life, but particularly in the workplace. And it is hopefully the start of a trend that is going to fundamentally alter how men are, you know, treat women and as a sort of a normal, quote-unquote normal standard. And Time has marked this with a Person of the Year, quote-unquote, award. We have a cover which of the magazine, which has Ashley Judd, Susan Fowler, Adama Iwu, Taylor Swift, and Isabel Pasquale. And there's a big video feature on the website and in the magazine as well, which features a bunch of other women, including the original Me Too creator, Tarana Burke, and of course, Rose McGowan, who has been one of the speakers of this issue on social media and has also really sort of done a lot to push this process along. And Terry Crews is also involved in this. Obviously, he is involved in his own lawsuit now of how he was harassed by a man in Hollywood as well. So this is really interesting and cool. And thank God Trump didn't get it. Like, he was the runner up. If he had gotten it again, I would have been bad. So mad. Yeah,
basically.
It was so annoying. Yeah. Also, just because like the world is bigger than America, mm-hmm. you know. Like, let's not, you know. Just anyway, this is great. This is really cool. I love this.
Yeah, I really love it too. I mean, if like 2017 was kind of a really bad year, but if it empowered and inspired people to fight for social justice, then I feel like maybe all the bad is worth it, because there's always light and dark tend to go together. And out of this terrible tragedy has come this really inspiring movement. And I think that it is very good of time to acknowledge that while it was disheartening that America, parts of America, voted in a president that does not care about women very much. That's not clearly not the view of other Americans. It's clearly not the view of people around the world, because it's been so inspiring to see the movement spread past borders on a map. So it's really great. Yeah. Piggybacking kind of off of that, I just, in general, it's been really inspiring to see a lot of these year in review type things that are starting to pop up really shine a light on social justice and the social justice movement and fighting for change that needs to happen. Because I was watching a YouTube Rewind that comes out every year. It came out this morning, right before we started recording. And they have this whole segment kind of towards like the middle end where they have people joining hands in different parts of the world, including DC. And then it kind of cuts to this montage of protests and tragedies that have happened, and people coming together and things like that. And kind of like that was, I feel like that was kind of like their own way of shining a light on the fact that that was a really big part of the year. And yeah, and I just really appreciate that that is still in the spotlight. And I hope it continues to be in the spotlight as we move into 2018.
Agreed. All right. So moving on now to TV show of the week. And I have you picked this up a few weeks ago, and I have now followed suit. I watched the first three episodes of Marvel's Runaways, and you know, the superheroes are just walking down, you know, the runway, showing off their capes.
It takes so a real exciting hero to walk down the runway.
Oh my gosh.
RuPaul's runway race.
Run, yes. Yeah. Marvel's runway
anyway
race. Yeah. Both shows were great. I actually, you know, I have HBO Nordic, and I just canceled my subscription because it's so expensive. But I was looking for like something to watch, and I realized they have Marvel's Runaways on there, because we don't have Hulu here, and sometimes the shows go to HBO Nordic. So I guess I was lucky, and I binged three episodes. This show is so good. Oh my God, I'm so into it. I love starting a show because you never know, right? Like, you just sit through the pilot and you're like, oh, not this crap again. And you can just sort of, when you watch so much TV, it's so disheartening when you can just feel yourself like, oh my God, I'm wasting my life with like yet another blah thing. This was not like that. I was hooked straight away. I think the characters, you know, Marvel's Runaways, like Pam kind of, you know, set it up when she talked about it a few weeks ago, but just in case you still haven't seen it, it follows this group of kids whose parents are all like, seem like supervillains. They're really creepy. They're so, oh my gosh. The only one I like is the dad, the one who is the girl who died's dad, who was having an affair with that other one. Like him.
You
then,
like him.
And then I he's my favorite. And then I also like the parents that were, one of them is the guy from Alias, Marshall, Kevin Wiseman, and his wife, like the hippie people. I like them.
Oh, Gert's and parents. Then,
yes. And then I like Gert. Gert, yeah, is my Gert's favorite. Oh my God.
it's so funny. Right before I watched the show really quickly, it was, who was it? Oh, our friend Mike, who's a friend of the show, he had tweeted something like, I am Gert, just like worried about fighting the patriarchy and butts. Yes. Yeah, that's like the perfect, because I love her. She's great. She's consistently so great. I'm always excited to see more of her.
Exactly, same. But honestly, like, there's very few, like, of the kids, I think I care about all of them. Like, I think they're all really interesting, and it is sort of funny because they are kind of like stereotypes in a way, and the parents too, but they sort of defy being cliche. You know, like there were a couple of lines where I was like, okay, I've heard this like a million times before. But for the most part, I really think that they managed to keep it interesting. Their dynamic between all the kids is really interesting. The dynamic between the parents. I mean, with them, there's too many of them that seem evil to me. You know, like there's a couple that I like and then the rest of them, I'm just like, they are devils and I'm afraid of them. But I'm sure it'll get more nuance and the show goes on. I think the first three episodes that I've seen, they've done an amazing job at giving depth and sort of soul to its very, very big cast of characters. And that's always what I look for in a show. It's that I care about the people and I care about whether or not the people care about each other. And I think the show really does that well. I think it's one of the only sort of superhero shows, quote unquote superhero shows, that I've seen where I've actually really sort of cared about the people. And I guess the only other exception is that the CW's upcoming Black Lightning actually accomplishes the same thing. And, you know, obviously we can sort of give our general reactions, but we can't really talk specifically about that. But I would just say I definitely was left with the same impression of like, oh my gosh, superpowers aside, I really want to know more about these people. And that's definitely how I felt about Runaways as well. It's a very exciting show. I can't wait for them all to discover their powers. I can't wait for them all to figure out everything that's going on. I want to know everything that's going on. I also really like Alex, who's like kind of the main character, I think, the boy with the glasses. Like, I think he's very, very sweet and a very compelling lead. So I'm glad that he's sort of at the center of everything. And yeah, it's just really good. I'm really into it. I just finished the third episode right before we started recording. And if I didn't have to go to sleep and get up early tomorrow, I would go back to watching it straight away.
Oh, yay. I'm so glad you like it, too. They just put up episode 5 here. So I need to watch that. But yeah, I totally agree. I'm really, out of everything that they've done so far, I'm just really impressed that they have given ample amounts of screen time to everybody. Like, everybody kind of has their own little thing. Nobody's getting lost. And yeah, it's just really, it's really well done so far. And I kind of like that it's this slow burn. It's not like, bam, powers, you know, like everybody's kind of learning about themselves and where they fit into this bigger picture. So, Well, I have just a really quick little plug. Last year, we got the pilot for Amazon's new series from the Amy Sherman-Palladino, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And the show is actually officially out now on Amazon Prime, so I wanted to give it a little plug. I have not watched past episode 3, but I really, really like this show a lot. If you're a fan of Gilmore Girls and you kind of like the cadence in which Amy Sherman-Palladino writes her dialogue, you're definitely going to really love this. It centers around a housewife in the early 1960s who kind of falls into stand-up comedy and decides to become a stand-up comic. She kind of like when she realizes that her husband, who was actually like kind of seriously pursuing it on the side, is like only good because she's the one that's writing the jokes. And she teams up with this woman who works at the comedy bar called Susie, who's actually played by actress Alex Borstein, who was the original choice for Suki on Gilmore Girls. So it's kind of fun to see that she finally made it into a Palladino series, you know, because they're big fans of her, and that would have been our Suki. She would have been a way different Suki than what Melissa McCarthy brought to the role. But yeah, this is like the perfect role for her. And Rachel Brosnahan, I think that's how you pronounce her name, who plays Miriam Maisel. She's the main character. She's just so great in this, and the show is so charming. And I love that it's kind of like a period piece because it's set, you know, in the 60s. And it's just really, really enjoyable. So if you're looking for something to binge as we head into the holidays, you know, kind of want to cozy up with something really fun, highly recommend checking it out. It's streaming on Amazon Prime.
Cool. All right. So moving into listener feedback now, we have a couple of tweets. Do you want to get the first one?
Sure. Chanel says, OMG, my wife literally just bought us tickets to Lady Bird this weekend. She's super excited. Oh, I hope you enjoy it. Write back and let us know what you thought, because I really loved this movie. But no spoilers, because Selena hasn't seen it.
No, I don't want to know anything about the Lady Birds
that are in this film. Write me.
Yes.
Tweet me or yeah.
Yeah. Kathleen Anderson says, I'm watching the epic Crisis on Earth X crossover and I'm remembering just how annoying all the CW commercials are. Wish they were still on Hulu. Yeah, I watch Supernatural with the CW commercials and they are very annoying and all the same. Oh my gosh. She also says, Psych is a lot like Sherlock if he claimed his skills were because he was psychic and he became a frat boy. It's really funny if you like ridiculous comedy, which I do. Interesting.
We have another tweet here from Nerdy Geek who says, okay, for the Arrowverse stuff, A, no Evil Flash because Evil Flash happened in season 3 or a version of him. That's what I'm assuming. B, either their daughter or granddaughter, not confirmed. C, that's the multiverse. Every Earth is slightly different. So this must be for you because I haven't seen it yet.
Yes, this was a response to my ABC questions that I asked last week. I also got very detailed responses from Meg, who kind of cleared it all up for me. So, yeah, I guess, okay, I buy it. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Now I don't have to worry about it anymore. And Rachel says, enjoying Girl Meets World. It's corny but sweet and funny. Reminds me of iCarly and Boy Meets World, of course. Thanks, Pam.
Yay! Thanks for watching, Yay. Rachel.
So we have a couple of emails as well. Thank you so much to everyone who tweeted. And the first email is from Aclaro. And it's kind of long, so
do take it away, right? Is this Alexandra or Alejandra Aclaro? I feel like you tweet us. I don't think this is like your actual... Is this your name?
Oh, it's Alejandra Claro. Yeah. It might be her. I don't know. It just says Aclaro, so...
All right. This person writes, hi ladies, I really wanted to let you guys know my feelings towards this movie, and I'm sorry, Selena, you still have to wait for the movie to come out. This may be a long email because I have so many feelings. This movie has not only topped my favorite, is this about Coco?
Yes.
Okay, got it. I didn't see like a thing, I just saw Pixar and I was like, wait, what is this? Anyway.
It's about the Frozen short.
All right. Okay, the email continues. This movie has not only topped my favorite Pixar movie, but my favorite Disney movie and possibly my top movie of all time. Since I heard about the story being done, I knew it would be a must watch. But the more things came out, like pictures and trailers, my eyes would already start watering just by the beauty they were portraying. I'm a Mexican-American with very strong Mexican roots from my little pueblito, which translates to town or village in Michoacán named... Okay, hold on. I have to like look at this before I pronounce it. Patambam, maybe. By the way, my grandma's from Michoacán too, so Michoacán represent. We often go back to our little pueblito during fiestas at the end of October, and we get to spend Dia de los Muertos there. We decorate the graves of our family members with marigolds and candles. We spend all day there with our families to eat, laugh, sing, and remember them. When the movie started, all I could do is think back on my little pueblito, the cobblestone streets, the colors of the houses, the stray cats and dogs roaming around, the vendors and the cemetery all transported me back to being in Mexico. Music has always been a major part in our family. My dad taught my brother how to play and my mom used to sing with him. We have several guitars in each household because when everyone gets together, we start singing and playing. The music and style that Ernesto de la Cruz was based on is the music that lives on in our family. We have wedding tradition that the husband-to-be's family serenades the bride the morning of her wedding. So for weddings, if you are from the groom's side, you don't sleep very much because the only time you practice is in the night before going into the morning of the wedding. And by the time you get back home, it's time for church. Because music has always been part of my life, my mom has told me stories of my dad before he died. Like the scene when Coco is singing with her dad. My dad used to sing to me in my crib or anytime I was crying to make me feel better, make me laugh. That scene is what did it for me. I could not stop crying after the first time I watched it. The second time I watched it, I took my mom and we watched it in Spanish. She had a very similar reaction to mine and had a lot to say after. The main thing she appreciated was how real it made her feel. The emotions and the love on screen were very real and the importance of having to go on with your family even after my dad was gone, but never allowing us to forget him. We constantly tell stories of the people who are gone in our lives because we know it is what keeps them alive in our hearts. One of the things that really stuck with me was that one day you'll be reunited with the people you love as long as you never forget them. Thanks for reading this really long email. Love what you're doing with the show.
Oh, that was wonderful.
You made me tear up a little bit. This is like, because I also, my grandparents have instilled very strong Mexican traditions in us, even though that's just like a fraction of what we are. But yeah, this is very heartwarming.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much for that email. And we do have another one from Hannah, Boxberger, who says, "Hi, Pam and Selena. I wrote in a little while ago, recommended the book Moxie, and I wanted to weigh in on the conversation regarding the Book of Dust. I'm the children's book buyer at an independent bookstore, and it has been so gratifying to see Book of Dust flying off the shelves. I would like to second an earlier opinion you were given that the book is incredible, no less than we would expect. However, if like me, it's been more than a few years since you've read the original trilogy, there is so much nuance in the book that would be missed, including characters that I wouldn't have realized were cameos without a reread. I also suggest reading the novella Lyra's Oxford, as our main character makes a brief appearance there. Just my opinion on the matter. You can follow the story along just fine without the others, but the Book of Dust is all the richer with them fresh in your mind, and it's a great excuse to experience those masterpieces again. Also, have either of you read Serafina by Rachel Hartman? It's an incredible take on dragons I haven't seen before or since reading, and it has a companion novel coming out in February called Tess of the Road, which is a marvelous read as well. Definitely worth checking out. Thanks so much, and keep up the awesome news." I have not read Serafina. Isn't Serafina the name of the mother in His Dark Materials?
Maybe. I can't remember.
Oh, no, wait. It's Serafina is the name of the Minister of Magic in
Fantastic Beasts. Fantastic Beasts, dragons, it all works. I haven't read this either, but when I was at university, I used to work at a library, and I worked a lot in the children's book section, and the children's librarian could not rave about Serafina more. Like, she was such a huge fan of that book. I remember her speaking very highly of it. So I'm sure it's lovely. And I'll have to look into checking it out from my local library now that you've brought it back to our attention.
For sure. For sure. I am. The next one on my list is still Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda. But this one should definitely go on the list.
I'm so excited for you to read that.
Especially with such a high recommendation. I am so excited to read it. I hope that you figure out where I get it.
You should do that, and then you should do The Upside of Unrequited after, and then I'll just, it's great.
Okay.
You do a little Albertalli binge.
Yes, yeah. So that brings us to the end of the listener feedback. Thank you so much again to everyone who wrote in. If you guys are listening and you would like to weigh in on the discussion, you can do that. You can tweet us at Hypable Hype. You can find us on Hypable itself, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Instagram at Hypable Hype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And of course, you can send us emails, which is hype@hypable.com. We also do, again, want to remind you of our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where we are kicking off our Merlin stuff this week. So if you're very excited about us starting Merlin and you are a patron at the $2 or more level, then keep an eye on that because something will be up very soon. And then next week, I believe we will be releasing our first episode here on the main feed. So, yay! I'm so excited, you guys. Oh my gosh, it's going to be so fun. And we also, of course, have our regular show 171 next week. So until next week, have a wonderful week, everyone, and enjoy Star Wars whenever you get to see it, and let us know what you think. My name is Selena.
And my name is Daniela.
Bye, guys!